Bush had already learned that some of the hijackers were people that the CIA had known were al-Qaeda and were in the United States. Now, he wanted to know when CIA had told the FBI and what the FBI had done about it. The answers were imprecise, but it became clear that the CIA had taken months to tell the FBI that the terrorists were in the country. When the FBI did learn, they failed to find them. Had the FBI put them on the television show America's Most Wanted or alerted the FAA about them, perhaps the entire cell could have been rounded up. Bush's look said he would want to come back to this issue later. For now, however, the president shifted to the economic damage. Somehow, he had learned that 4 shopping malls in Omaha had closed after the attacks. "I want the economy back, open for business, right away. Banks, stock market, everything. Tomorrow." Ken Dam, the deputy secretary of the Treasury, filling in for the traveling Paul O'Neill, pointed out that there was physical damage to the Wall Street infrastructure. "As soon as we get the rescue operations done up there, shift everything to fixing that damage so we can reopen," Bush urged. Turning to Secretary of Transportation Norm Mineta, he pressed for the resumption of air travel. Mineta suggested that flights could begin at noon the next day. Brian Stafford urged the president to spend the night in the bunker, but he would have none of it. Following the meeting, he went to the Oval Office and began working the telephones. I returned to the Situation Room and found my team hard at it. Cressy was on the telephone to New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani's chief of staff. "Anything he wants," Cressy said. "Troops, equipment, and if FEMA or any agency is slow, call us directly." Kurtz was talking to Verizon about the stock exchange. I asked him to put them on hold for a minute so I could give him what we in the White House called guidance. "From the president, for you. 2 priorities. First, search and rescue. Second, reopen the markets. Let me know what you need to do that." Paul looked up, a bit of fatigue appearing for the first time. "How about 5 miles of fiber optic cable and 12 switches and routers installed?" "That shouldn't be a problem. We can get that," I pressed him, remembering the president's determination. "So, can you have the markets open Thursday?" I knew as soon as I said it was too ambitious. Even though we were already getting calls from CEOs at Cisco, AT&T, and others, offering personnel and equipment, no questions asked. "Try Monday," Kurtz shot back, and went on with the call. Lisa was in dialogue with Governor Pataki.
"Well, don't you have an estimate of the dead?" she asked.
I took her aside. "You know those chemical and biological detectors you're developing? I want some, now, here, and at the Capitol." "Well, there are only 3 small problems with that, Dick," Lisa began. "A, they're experimental. And B, they're in California. And C, nothing is flying right now." "Right. So, here, at the White House, Wednesday, up and running," I asked.
Okay, she said, adding it to her list.
The Navy staff of the White House mess had reappeared and were distributing sandwiches. I realized I hadn't eaten since the night before, when I had gone to a new seafood restaurant near the White House with Rich Bonin of 60 Minutes. Bonin was obsessed with al-Qaeda, had done a story about terrorism with me and Leslie Stahl in October. They had taped 3 hours of interviews with me for a 17-minute segment. Now, without my knowing it, CBS was running much of the unused interview, including me explaining the concept of COG, continuity of government. The night before, Bonin asked if it was true that I had asked for a transfer. As of October 1st, I would be starting a new national program on cybersecurity. Bonin wanted to run the story that I was quitting the terrorism job in frustration with the new administration's lack of focus on al-Qaeda. I asked him not to, but admitted that I had sought the transfer. It seemed like ages ago.